Well, that brings us to our speaker. So we're trudging through our 8-week series, our Heart of Recovery series, and tonight Dave Thorne is going to carry the message. What's the topic tonight, Dave? War on drugs. I had my own personal war on drugs, and I lost. But I'm glad to be here because actually, I guess that's actually wrong. The truth is God prevails. And somebody said it really nicely today. It's because of my weakness that I seek him. Somebody put it in a fresh new way. Paul talks about it. If it's my weakness that makes me strong because I seek God, and God's strength is made perfect in weakness. Anyways, take it away.
Me, but it does concern you. It concerns us all because of the way it tears at our lives. And because it's aimed at destroying the brightness and life of the sons and daughters of the United States. For 5 years, I've been traveling across the country, learning and listening. And one of the most hopeful signs I've seen is the building of an essential new awareness of how terrible and threatening drug abuse is to our society. This was one of the main purposes when I started, so of course it makes me happy that that's been accomplished. But each time I meet with someone new or receive another letter from a troubled person on drugs, I yearn to find a way to help share the message that cries out from them. As a parent, I'm especially concerned about what drugs are doing to young mothers and their newborn children. Listen to this news account from a hospital in Florida of a child born to a mother with a cocaine habit. Nearby, a baby named Paul lies motionless in an incubator, feeding tubes riddling his tiny body. He needs a respirator to breathe and a daily spinal tap to relieve fluid buildup on his brain. Only 1 month old, he's already suffered 2 strokes. Now you can see why drug abuse concerns every one of us, all the American family. Drugs steal away so much. They take and take. Until finally, every time a drug goes into a child, something else is forced out, like love and hope and trust and confidence. Drugs take away the dream from every child's heart and replace it with a nightmare. And it's time we in America stand up and replace those dreams. Each of us has to put our principles and consciences on the line, whether in social settings or in the workplace, to set forth solid standards and stick to them. There's no moral middle ground. Indifference is not an option. We want you to help us create an outspoken intolerance for drug use. For the sake of our children, I implore each of you to be unyielding and inflexible in your opposition to drugs. Our young people are helping us lead the way. Not long ago in Oakland, California, I was asked by a group of children what to do if they were offered drugs. And I answered, just say no. Soon after that, those children in Oakland formed a Just Say No club. And now, there are over 10,000 such clubs all over the country. Well, their participation and their courage in saying no needs our encouragement. We can help by using every opportunity to force the issue of not using drugs to the point of making others uncomfortable, even if it making ourselves unpopular. Our job is never easy because drug criminals are ingenious. They work every day to plot a new and better way to steal our children's lives, just as they've done by developing this new drug, crack. For every door that we close, they open a new door to death. They prosper on our unwillingness to act. So we must be smarter and stronger and tougher than they are. It's up to us to change attitudes and just simply dry up their markets. And finally, to young people watching or listening, I have a very personal message for you. There's a big, wonderful world out there for you. It belongs to you. It's exciting and stimulating and rewarding. Don't cheat yourselves out of this promise. Our country needs you, but it needs you to be clear-eyed and clear-minded. I recently read one teenager's story. She's now determined to stay clean, but was once strung out on several drugs. What she remembered most clearly about her recovery was that during the time she was on drugs, everything appeared to her in shades of black and gray. And after her treatment, she was able to see colors again. So to my young friends out there, life can be great, but not when you can't see it. So open your eyes to life, to see it in the vivid colors that God gave us as a precious gift to his children, to enjoy life to the fullest and to make it count. Say yes to your life, and when it comes to drugs and alcohol, just say no.
You know, when I watch that, that's one of the saddest things that I've seen in a long time, because Nancy Reagan's heart was in the right place. And her message is profound. But that has to be one of the worst anti-drug campaigns of all time, because it accomplished nothing. And it cost millions and millions and millions of dollars. But that's not any indictment on Nancy Reagan, because she was trying to do the right thing. So this was in 1980, and this was really the beginning of the war on drugs. If you remember, if you're old enough to remember, Richard Nixon really started talking about it in the 70s. But it was Nancy Reagan that really brought it to the forefront. So we're going to talk a little bit tonight about what we've tried in the United States. We're going to talk about what we haven't tried. And we're going to talk about the hard realities of the war on drugs. One of the things that's interesting about the war on drugs is that when we talk about that, we don't talk about alcohol and tobacco, and increasingly more, we don't talk about marijuana, because those things are legal. So there's no war on those horrible drugs. And the philosophy, the attitude is that if it's legal, it can't be a problem. And yet, turning around and seeing more and more drugs legal, the last one being marijuana. I just got back from Colorado, and as many of you know, in Denver, Colorado, it is now legal to possess psilocybin mushrooms. Now, I don't know how many of you ever did psilocybin mushrooms, but let me tell you, there is absolutely no reason that that drug should be legal. Nor is there any reason that alcohol, tobacco, and marijuana should be. So when we talk about the war on drugs, we have to exclude those drugs, because that's not part of the war on drugs. So let's look a little bit at some of the things that have been tried. And some of them you'll be familiar with, and some of them you may not. How many of you remember this? How many bumper stickers have you seen with DARE on it? Anybody know what that stands for? No? Okay, it stands for Drug Abuse Resistance Education. Drug Abuse Resistance Education. And the founder of this program was Chief Daryl Gates of the Los Angeles Police Department. And again, like Nancy Reagan, he had good intentions. The problem with, I don't know if any of you know anything about DARE, but basically it was about snitching, if you really want to know the truth of it. The idea behind it was that we tell on anybody that we know that's doing drugs, illegal drugs, including our mom and dad, our brothers and sisters, our best friends, our teacher, et cetera, et cetera. How well do you think that worked? It did not work well at all. First of all, the idea of turning your parents in is fraught with so many problems that I don't think we even need to go there. So the concept was flawed from the very beginning because it was really about telling on people. So now DARE, in its current incarnation, has changed its concept, and it's now, I don't know if any of you have seen this, it's now called Keeping It Real. And they decided that telling on people wasn't really the way to win the war on drugs. So now it's called Keeping It Real. And Keeping It Real is R-E-A-L, refuse, explain, avoid, and leave. So this program has some much better basic tenets, one of which is this is an educational program that is taught to grades 5 through 7, and it is not taught by the classroom teacher, as many of DARE's programs were in the past. It is taught by police officers. So right off the bat, it has some credibility. It also enables, among other things, for the police officer to talk about consequences. So what are the basic concepts here? Refuse. We teach these age groups from grades 5 to 7 to refuse drugs when they're offered. We also teach them to explain to people why they're refusing the drugs. We also avoid drugs when they're around. And when they are around, we leave. Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? I have to tell you that although this is better than the snitch program, this is not an overwhelming success. And one of the studies that's been done on this program indicates that a lot of these kids that don't know anything about drugs all of a sudden know something about drugs. And guess what? They want to give it a try. So we start to look at these programs, and there just are no panaceas. So this is what that one is. Okay, the next one. Anybody know anything about this one? Does this look familiar? Okay, Mothers Against Drunk Driving. Now, most of you know something about this story because the woman who founded this lived in Fair Oaks, California. She founded it in 1980. Her name is Candy Leitner. And Candy's 13-year-old daughter was hit and run by a drunk driver. And she was not immediately killed, and he left her to die, which she did. When they arrested this gentleman and they took a look at his rap sheet, he had been arrested for 4 previous DUIs, one of which was a hit and run. So Candy Leitner was mad, and she started this organization. And this organization has done a lot of good, because let me show you some of the things that MAD has done. One of the things is that it was through MAD that they got the blood alcohol lowered from 1.0 to 0.8. Now that's what you call very positive action. Secondly, she's the one that really encouraged sobriety checkpoints. And some of you have gone through these sobriety checkpoints probably sweating bullets, you know. I remember I went through a sobriety checkpoint one time after I got sober, and I was still sweating bullets. It was just the idea that it was there. And I kept saying to myself, what am I worrying about? I'm sober. Scary stuff. She also was responsible for the introduction of ignition interlock devices. Anybody, you know what this is? You cannot start your automobile if you've been drinking alcohol. And one of the things that MAD is trying to do now is they're trying to get these factory installed. I don't know if that'll ever happen, but that's an interesting idea, isn't it? Cannot start an automobile out of the factory if you've had any alcohol at all. Now, that would probably necessitate further lowering the blood alcohol. By the way, the blood alcohol for drivers under the age of 21 now is 0.01. And so anyway, yes?
I think I read not too long ago that some states are lowering it from 0.8 to 0.5.
Idaho. Idaho, is that right?
But not for much.
And truck drivers, it's 0.0 and so forth, commercial. Anyway, so another thing that she's done, and even if you remember with Grand Theft Auto, come on, Jeff, you play Grand Theft
Auto? The video game?
Yes, sir.
It's too violent for me.
Yeah, okay, good. Thank you. Right answer. He says it's too violent. Okay, so those of you who are not familiar with Grand Theft Auto, which a bunch of, unfortunately, kids play, Grand Theft Auto celebrates drunk driving, basically. So she made that game get labeled as adult only. Now, what good that did, I don't know, but it's not a bad idea. All right? So that's mad. So this is good. This is some positive stuff in the war on drugs. All right, next case. Students for a Sensible Drug Policy. Anybody know anything about this little organization? Ever heard of this? All right. So this is the one, I've talked about this before. We know that Nancy's program was Just Say No. SSDP's program is Just Say No, K-N-O-W. And it really started originally in Canada, and it's totally about education, which I am a big advocate of that myself. I think it's very important. Whether or not anybody pays any attention to it is another story, but it's certainly important. And, you know, even those of us in recovery, that's why we do Heart of Recovery. You know, I've said before that if I had cancer, the first thing I would do is get on the internet and find out everything I could about that disease. I want to know what the state of the art is, what the cutting edge is. Same thing with sobriety. We need to know about our disease. And we want to find out everything we can about that. So education is a very, very positive thing. So this is the Just Say No KNOW program. And this is what they do. They promote a dialogue. Most of this now is being done at the college level. This is not so much middle school and high school. It's small groups, much like we would have with AA, and small groups are always, as you know, very effective. It's a small group educational program. One of the things it does that's really great is it does referrals. So a guy can go to this organization on campus and say, hey, I got a problem, and they can give them some referrals to treatment or AA or NA, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And here's one important thing. They convey only factual drug information. They are not judgmental, and they draw no conclusions. Just the facts, man. Just the facts. And then you can do with that information what you want. And I think one of the problems that we have is when people try to get judgmental and they say, you shouldn't do drugs, they're bad for you. That's not really helpful because that doesn't give us any factual information. So this organization is about getting out the facts. They give you the facts, and then you can decide what you want to do with those facts. And, of course, you know, so again, here's our friend. Any South Park fans here? Okay, so here's Mr. Mackey or whatever his name is. And, you know, he says, marijuana is bad. Drugs are bad. Well, you know what? That's not going to get it. We need to have information. We need to have solid, factual information. And that's part of the Just Say No thing. It's an oversimplification of a much bigger issue. Okay, so let's take a look at another part of the war on drugs, and it is called harm reduction. Anyone familiar with harm reduction? Okay, the concept between harm reduction as a philosophy is that instead of eliminating the problem, we want to lessen the problem. And I'll give you some examples of harm reduction. It'll become obvious to you. By the way, there are treatment centers who do harm reduction. So I come from an environment that was totally about abstinence, as most of you do. But there are some treatment centers out there that talk about harm reduction. And I'll give you some examples of what harm reduction looks like. The patch and nicotine gum. Now that, I'm generally not a big fan of harm reduction, but this is fine. This is great. And you know what? For a lot of people, this works. I know some people that have been very successful with this. Unless you abuse it. You know, like my brother-in-law, who used to get on an airplane back when you could smoke on airplanes and put patches all over him. And I was like, you don't get it. Anyway, needle exchanges. So rather than have somebody get Hep C, we would rather have them have clean needles. That is an example of harm reduction. And, you know, when I was working for the Department of Corrections out in the prison system, I would say, this is an anecdotal statistic, I would say 99% of the IV drug users that I met in prison were Hep C positive. 99%. In fact, I met two guys that weren't, and quite frankly, I think one of them never got tested. So that's what we're talking about with dirty needles. So, okay. All right, so designated driver, that's harm reduction. Of course, I used to say that if you had a designated driver, you had to have a designated drunk, and that was me. Right? I mean, what's the point of having a designated driver if you don't have a designated drunk, right? I mean, that was me. All right, so methadone, this is where I run afoul of harm reduction. This is trading one problem for a worse problem. So, and there are alternatives, great alternatives now to methadone, primarily buprenorphine. So methadone, you know, I wasn't sure about methadone. And one time I had a guy in who was detoxing cold turkey from methadone. It's the worst withdrawal I've ever seen in my life, bar none. It made heroin look like a day at the beach. So, naloxone, anybody know what this is? Okay, so naloxone is the drug that they give to people who are overdosing on opiates that brings you back immediately. So this is now being made available either very inexpensively or free to drug addicts. That's harm reduction. Free condoms, that's harm reduction. So we get the STD epidemic down to a manageable level. And the 100% best example and most successful example in all of history of harm reduction is seatbelts. Right? Love seatbelts, I think. Yeah. Anyway, so that's harm reduction. Another thing on the war on drugs. So let's take a look now at how our government spends the money on the war on drugs. Let's see what the United States government is doing in the war on drugs. Here is the federal budget for 2019 on the war on drugs. You're going to love this, I promise. $12 billion on law enforcement. $18 billion on the border wall. $2.2 billion on the DEA, another law enforcement organization. $625 million on the opioid crisis. $50 million on the free distribution of naloxone. Anybody see a problem with this?
Is the $12 billion all law enforcement or just law enforcement about drugs?
law enforcement as it relates to drugs, and the DEA is purely about drugs. Anybody see a problem with this? Anybody see a problem here? Where's the rehabilitation? Where's the prevention? Where's the rehabilitation? It's not there. We are not spending a dime on rehabilitation because the opioid crisis, we'll get into what that's being spent on. There's no rehabilitation here. I mean, I'm sorry. I don't care where you fall politically. $18 billion on the border wall? And it's not stopping 1 ounce of drugs from getting into the United States. Not one. So, all right. All right, so let's talk about the DEA for a second. Drug Enforcement Administration. And what they're up against. And this gives us an idea of the scope of the war on drugs. Drug imports into the United States, how do they get in here? The bulk drugs, huge quantities of drugs, like cocaine, methamphetamine, and so forth, and marijuana, large quantities, come in through our ports. The majority of the drugs, illegal drugs that come in the United States, come in through the mail. The mail. The illegal prescription drug business globally now is $75 billion. Internet illegal drugs. Most of the illegal drugs are being come out of either India or China. There are 35,000 inline pharmacies in the United States. 90% of those are out of federal compliance, which means they are illegal. 50% of that are painkillers without a prescription. You want to know why we have an opioid crisis? It's plain and simple. There it is right there. It's all internet illegal drug orders. So it's interesting because, we keep talking about this problem with North Korea with our buddy Kim Jong-un. And we're worried about him making nuclear warheads to put on his missiles that he keeps shooting all over the place, are we not? That is nothing compared to what he's doing in terms of manufacturing drugs. They are now the largest manufacturer of methamphetamine, bulk methamphetamine in the world. And the quality of the methamphetamine that they're making is very high quality, very pure. It's the best methamphetamine in the world. And there is absolutely no way that he could not know about that. There is no way you could manufacture that quantity of methamphetamine in that country without him knowing about it. And we're worried about missiles? You know, a missile is nothing. He's going to destroy a good part of the world with his drugs long before he's going to do it with any missiles. So,
where does that data come from?
Now what he does is he ships this bulk of the bulk methamphetamines to China primarily, and then China packages it and distributes it. So he is really purely a manufacturer. China's the middleman on this. So anyway, what else about the DEA? Was there anything else that I wanted to talk about there? Not really. Well, I'll tell you this. So all of this is really what we call the whack-a-mole strategy. So every time we beat something down, make some arrests, do all this, it just pops right back up again. And look at this number here. In the last 40 years, the United States has spent $1 trillion on the war on drugs. And what do we have to show for it? Not a heck of a lot. So this is starting to sound very depressing, but now we get to the point is, what can we do about this? One thing for sure is I'm not going to stop Kim Jong-un from making methamphetamine, and I'm not going to stop the illegal pharmacies that are causing the opioid crisis, but there are some things that can be done. So let's take a look at what we call the battle plan on the war on drugs. Fighting fear with truth. One thing we need to do is to make treatment more available. So when I was working for the Department of Corrections, my job was to work with the substance abuse program in the prisons, and the caveat for those people going through that program was that they got early releases, and they were supposed to be released to rehab. So on paper, that looks great. The problem is, we didn't have the beds for them. And to my knowledge, we still don't. So we need to make treatment more available. And we need to make treatment more affordable. But still, that being said, in the state of California, it costs approximately $1,000 a day to incarcerate someone in the prison system. It costs about $100 a day to rehabilitate them in a treatment center. So from a cost-effective standpoint, the state of California is way better off spending it on treatment. And then we need to educate, and grassroots education all the way through the school system. And again, it's presenting factual information. People can do with that information what they want. It's not about saying just say no. It's not about saying drugs are bad. It's about educating people.
Is that happening now?
Yes, it is, but not to the degree that it should be. And then there needs to be more research put in to all kinds of things, but particularly into blockers. So we have naltrexone. We have antabuse, which we've had for years. We need more of that. Naltrexone is an opiate blocker. We need more of those medications. Now, part of the problem with naltrexone had been that, you know, first of all, you have to take it. Right? So I don't feel like taking that today, so I'll just shoot up and go for it. Well, now they're doing implants with that drug, which makes a whole lot more sense. They also have shots available that you only get once a month. And of course, we know with antabuse, if you stop taking it, it takes about a week for it to not be effective. So at least you have to think about it for a week before you drink. So I don't know if anybody's had any experience with antabuse. If you don't know what it is, if you drink on antabuse, you're going to get very, very sick. As somebody once said, you won't be dead, you just wished you were. All right, so that's some of the things that we can do or we can talk about. Here's some more. Health insurers. Now, some of the health insurance does pay for treatment, drug treatment, but many of them do not. We clearly need more insurance for drug treatment. Also, we need to unlicense prescription abusing doctors. So you know how this whole system with the ordering on the internet, they send it to some doctor and he writes a prescription and he looks at some phony questionnaire that you've filled out that says you're sick. No, those people should not have a license. And the DEA is very aware of this and they're starting to do this, but this needs to be done in mass. And all these pharmacies that really are only clearinghouses need to be shut down. There's a book called Mastermind. Anyone familiar with this book? I strongly recommend you read this book. It's called Mastermind. And it's about that whole industry. And by the way, that's where all the information about North Korea comes from. Somebody asked where that comes from. Mastermind. So anyway, unlicensed drug abusing doctors, and also guys that are writing thousands and thousands of prescriptions for opiates. Come on. I mean, that's a big part of the problem. Rehab for simple possession. There is no way that we should be putting anyone in jail for simple possession. Now, if it's possession with intent to sell or it's possession with violence, that's a different story. No one should be in jail for simple possession. We need to put those people immediately into rehab. And that's being done by default because the federal government put part of our prison system into federal receivership and made us reduce the population by about 25,000. So a lot of this is starting to happen because the people they let out were people that were in there for simple possession. And then we need to expand prison-based rehab. And that's what I was part of. I was part of the SAP, which is the Substance Abuse Program, which still exists, but it's only in a very few prisons. It needs to be in all of the prisons. So what can you do about that? Well, you know, if you're the kind of guy that calls up your representative, then that's what you need to do if you want to be proactive. All right, so let's take a look now at, by the way, you know, going back real quickly to that whole budget thing about how we're spending our money, obviously we need to do a better job of that. But, you know, when I was looking at that, I couldn't help but think of that Will Rogers thing when he said, thank God we don't get as much government as we pay for. Because, I mean, that is just horrible. That's, anyway, so, okay, so let's talk about what we can do on an individual basis, personal stuff. What can we do? I mean, it's very frustrating for me. I mean, we can't do, I mean, these things are $75 billion industry. What is Dave Thorne going to do about that? Not much. But, you know, there's some things I can do in my own little world that might be able to make a difference. So what can I do? First of all, moving around in my little world, I can be transparent. I can talk openly to people about my personal situation. What has worked for me? What has not worked for me? And I think that's what this ministry does a great job of. I really think we do. That's what these people next door, this is what they're all about. AA to me is all about transparency. And we should be sharing our experience, strength, and hope with people that are out there struggling. Not the people that are going to AA. I'm talking about the people that aren't going to AA or aren't going to NA. Be transparent with them. We know people out there that are abusing drugs. I know people that are out there abusing drugs. We need to testify. That means that we need to share our experiences with our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ with anybody and everybody that will listen. Because that is the biggest weapon against the war on drugs, is a relationship with Jesus Christ. So we need to do that. And we need to have a sponsor. We need to have sponsorship. So a lot of people, you know, they go into these rooms, they go into these programs, they don't have sponsorship. So how does that help? It's because it gives us guidance as we move through it. People need to have sponsors. We need to serve. You know, this is one of the things with Bruce and Andy, service. We need to serve. And if we serve, we're going to help other people not go down the road that we may have been down, or help them to get on the right road. I mean, I don't know what and could be more important. And those of you who have been coming here for a long time, to Step Closer and R&R, that are not in service, get into service. See Bruce. I mean, we're always talking about this. We want people to serve. We don't know the talents of everybody in this room, but I know there are spiritual gifts in this room that we don't have any clue about. And Bruce wants to hear that, and I want to hear that, and Andy wants to hear that. And then you should vote. You know, I get these people, they complain all the time about this and that, this politician, that politician, then I find out they don't vote. Vote. And don't just vote for candidates, vote for measures. If we would have gotten out there and voted, we wouldn't have this stupid legalization of marijuana. But we didn't do that, or somebody didn't do that. And then we need to pray. We need to be prayer warriors, and we need to have this war on drugs on our mind in our prayer life. So, battle plan. Pray without ceasing. 1 Thessalonians 5:17. You know that that's all it says? That's the whole verse. Pray without ceasing. Is that great advice or what? I'm looking at people that do that all the time. I'm looking right at Virginia. Does that all the time. She never stops. Fight. Put on the whole armor of God. Trust. Having done all, stand. So if I can read this unbelievably fine print, we'll get this, because that's worth a read. Put on the full armor of God so that you will be able to stand against the schemes of the devil. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the powers, against the world forces of this darkness, against the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places. Therefore, take up the full armor of God that you will be able to resist in the evil day, and having done everything, to stand firm. Let me tell you, all you have to do is read the scriptures and you'll find out who's running this world. It's Satan. He's the god of this world. And if you don't believe that, just review what I talked about tonight. All of this drug, all of these problems, it's all Satan at work. But we are connected to somebody who is so much more powerful than Satan, it's not even funny. And we need to never forget that when we're discouraged. So this war on drugs, it can't be won. It's not going to be won in your lifetime. It's not going to be won in my lifetime. But we can individually make a difference in our worlds of influence by just taking one person at a time and one day at a time. You know, I remember when I was first started as a counselor, and I was so enthusiastic, and I was doing everything that I could, and the director of the treatment center called me in, and she said, "David, you know, and I need to talk. I know you want to save the world, but I need for you to save just one person at a time. So you know what? We're not going to win the war on drugs. We just have to do it one person at a time." Okay? Let's pray. Our gracious Heavenly Father, constantly up against this war on drugs and the war with Satan, and we know that you will be the victor. We ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen.